Welcome to the first episode of White Bird Mutual Aid on 97.3 KEPW. I'm your host for the next half hour, Hannah Francis. Over the last several months, I've been collecting interviews with staff and community members about White Bird Clinic and what its value and role is in our society. In future episodes, I'll focus on specific conversations with individuals. But for this first episode, it's going to be a little different. I've gathered bits of conversations with people who are going to help introduce you to White Bird Clinic. So first, a little history. The collective started out as a medical care and crisis intervention service in the 1970s when two doctorate psychology students from the University of Oregon, Dennis Eckinger and Frank Lemons, saw a need for alternative crisis response and care in the community. In the beginning, White Bird Clinic was entirely made up of volunteers. Lemons was close with many people who lived together on a commune that made up the core volunteers of White Bird Clinic for many years.
Up in CV Loop Road, there were 5 different buildings, all situated, and it was near the I-5 still during that period of time. Those 5 houses, basically, the folks that lived there were Lucy Lynch and Colleen Bell. Colleen Bell has been on the board of directors of White Bird for years. Zach Schwartz, who started Chrysalis and was one of the main folks that started off with White Bird. Bobby Dritz, who was one of the main people that started it, was living up there. Lucy Parker, Douglas Parker. All of these folks were already involved with the creation of White Bird.
This is Jorge, a community member and longtime volunteer at White Bird Clinic. He lived on the commune that hosted the White Bird community. He recounts his experience discovering Eugene in the 70s.
So 1973, when we showed up in town, it was a Saturday, and the first thing we saw was the Saturday market, and we were blown away. I mean, we're from Los Angeles area, so it was like, wow, there's hippies everywhere around here. You know, looking back now, I realize that it was a pretty historic time. Saturday market was maybe 2 years old. The Oregon Country Fair was the Renaissance Fair, and it was maybe 2-3 years old. Chrysalis White Bird was maybe 2 years old. So they were just starting.
White Bird Clinic was formed in a time when the zeitgeist of Eugene was all about community. They made a lot of decisions as a collective from the beginning, even though it wasn't always horizontally led. Jorge tells us about what this looked like.
So at night, I mean, I wasn't involved with the everyday operation, but at night, after work, they'd get together and I would get, you know, they would start having this meeting at around 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. And they would boil up a pot of coffee. They'd all sit around this big long table at Susan's place and debrief.
The growing psychedelic movement of the 60s and 70s spurred the need for a different kind of care for people who were having quote unquote bad trips. Law enforcement and hospitals did not understand how to deal with the situation and resorted to arresting people who were on substances or giving them high doses of tranquilizers to sleep it off. Neither of these methods are effective or human-centered. Dennis and Frank, however, thought that they could help with this problem. With the help of Dr. Leonard Jacobson, a well-respected surgeon at the time, they started a psychosocial medical free clinic closely based off the Haight-Ashbury Clinic in San Francisco. Trigger warning, there are references to physical abuse in this next story.
At one of them, it was a concert, And instead of having Whitebird, they hired the athletic department to supply security and interface with the public. And I was there at one particular moment while I watched their staff. A woman was tripping out in front of the fountain, and they did not know what to do, and they ended up dragging her away by her hair, traumatizing her, and she just escalated. And it was like they almost caused a near riot just doing that, because then the rest of the people that were going there to see the concert, who were probably tripping themselves, going, you know, getting shocked and traumatized by what was going on. Afterwards, they got feedback, you know, going, hey, you know, you created your own trauma and emergency. When you really, you know, when you're the security team, you have to know that those are some of the skills you need. So that interaction led to more people looking to Whitebird to understand that security wasn't just about having people follow the rules.
The need for trauma-informed, human-centered care is still present today. To fill this need, Whitebird has the volunteer-run Rock Medicine Team that provides crisis and medical response at concerts, festivals, and community events. This is what Jorge was talking about. But it also has CAHOOTS, Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets, which is a 24/7 medical and crisis intervention unit that is dispatched out of the police fire ambulatory line. Tim Black, a former CAHOOTS crisis worker and current head of consulting, talks a little about why the service is still important and relevant.
I mean, we see with like Daniel Prude, you know, Walter Walsh Jr., Kowalski Trawick, so many other, you know, folks throughout the country are dying, you know, because it's law enforcement that's showing up to these crisis situations and that they're ill-equipped for, you know, that they're not trained for, and really where the uniform, the presence of force is likely what escalated these situations to become fatal. You know, we don't even have to look that far, right? There's Stacey Kenny in Springfield when she was killed by Sergeant Rick Lewis, who, by the way, got a Purple Heart commendation for Stacey Kenny's death and the injuries that he received as a result of that violence. Stacey Kenny's family had been reaching out to Springfield police for a year, asking for help. In the traffic stop where she was killed, she was not posing a threat to, you know, other community members. She stopped, rolled down her window, threw a small noise-making device out the driver's side window, and then tried to pull into traffic again. She had been expressing fear that she was going to be killed by public safety. And, you know, really was carrying that fear with her in the community and was really responding to that fear of violence when she had that fateful encounter, you know? So I guess when we're looking at this work, you know, the stakes are profoundly high. And, you know, really every time we hear another example of somebody who has experienced violence or has been killed by police when officers responded for that mental health crisis, it really reinforces that this is just not something that you can train better. You know, this isn't something where new policies and new standards in the work environment are going to change the outcomes. This is really about recognizing that we are missing something from our response system. And that's something that we're missing is that mental health response. You know, have those first responders who aren't coming from that lens of enforcement, but rather from, you know, a perspective of least intervention necessary, of de-escalation and stabilization.
Whitebird Clinic strives to provide a variety of services that meet basic health and human needs, like food, clothing, shelter, safety, human interaction, access to hygiene, crisis intervention, mental health assistance, medical attention, and so on and so forth. There are a lot of people in Eugene and the rest of Oregon who do not have access to these basic needs. And it's worth mentioning that this is a national and global crisis, but that is beyond the scope of this episode. Whitebird Clinic strives to provide these services to people in Lane County who cannot get them elsewhere. Many of the people who receive services are experiencing houselessness, are mentally or physically challenged, or are experiencing or have experienced some of the many forms of oppression, discrimination, and marginalization that runs rampant through American society.
The folks who we serve, these are people who maybe have tried a lot of other doors and have been turned away or have, you know, been treated without dignity and respect. And I think that Whitebird kind of swoops in at that point in time to say, like, we see you. We may not understand your experience from a first person perspective, but we empathize with your experience because there are a lot of things that are happening in this world that are unfair and unjust and violent. And here are the services that we can provide, and the way in which we're going to provide them is like, yeah, meeting people where they're at.
Front Rooms, Nest, Medical, Dental, and many other branches of Whitebird have been formed and tailored to try to meet the needs of those who cannot get these services elsewhere. Whitebird Clinic tries to address these needs in a holistic and humanistic way. Matt and Haley, the Whitebird volunteer and training coordinators, help to explain what this means in context.
Like, historically and philosophically, Whitebird's mission is like to create or recreate a model of care that is client-centered, that is centered around people's individuality and dignity, and that really prioritizes holding people in unconditional positive regard. So I think one of the really foundational pillars of Whitebird and the folks who are attracted to working here and the work that we do is that we understand that the systems in which we live are really unjust and impact people in a lot of different ways, especially depending on the intersection of identities that you hold. And so I think that Whitebird understands the kind of oppression that exists within the world that we live in and seeks to meet people in a way that those systems are not.
The individual, any person, is the expert in their own lives.
This can look like understanding that when a person comes to get medical attention, they may also need clothes and food, someone to talk to, and that kind of thing. We strive to meet as many of these needs as possible, so long as the individual wants that assistance. To talk to you more about some of the core values and methodologies that inform this practice of human-centered care, former CAHOOTS crisis worker and the current head of the consulting department, Tim Black.
I think that the four kind of big pillars that I talk about when it comes to Whitebird Clinic at large, not just CAHOOTS, is being person-centered, being trauma-informed, utilizing harm reduction, and then our structure as a consensus-based collective. Those are really kind of the four tenets. And the reason that I highlight it that way is that we need to be person-centered, we need to be trauma-informed, and we need to utilize harm reduction skills in our interactions with each other as part of a collective, and being forced to really use those skills to make decisions around what color we paint in office or how we're going to spend money or new policies being developed really grounds us in those concepts when we then go out and engage with folks who are in crisis or, you know, folks who are receiving care from, you know, any Whitebird provider. Yeah. So I define being kind of person-centered first as really recognizing that the individual is the expert in their lived experience. And so when you're talking about a crisis intervention, I can talk to you until I'm blue in the face about all of the things that work well for me, all of my constructive coping skills. And, you know, I can tell you, okay, you know, go take a bath, read a chapter out of this book, listen to this podcast. You're going to cook this meal with this kind of tea and it's going to be amazing. And that would be great if Tim was in crisis and needed a reminder of those things. But the person in crisis is not me. And so I really need to ask them, what is it that soothes you? You know, where do you find comfort? What works for you? What doesn't? You know, and so it's really centering everything that we do around, you know, the expertise of the person that we're serving. You know, being trauma-informed is really recognizing that everybody, you know, has experienced trauma in some capacity, and that we have an obligation to create systems and to interact with each other in ways that reduce the impact of that trauma, you know, and lessen its effects. Harm reduction is really just about, kind of is tied directly to that, is really about when there are harmful or maladaptive practices, what are the things that we can do to reduce that harm on the individual or others? You know, so, you know, in the context of business meetings, you know, that's where a lot of compromise comes in. You know, is it, where can we do the least amount of harm with reductions to funding? You know, what is it that we can do to find other ways to address this service gap, you know, that may be emerging? And then being a consensus-based collective really means moving away from the traditional hierarchical organizational structure. And instead, you know, we kind of talk about orbits, where there are these different orbits of perspective, and you need to really kind of bring all of those different perspectives together and find agreement, find compromise, you know, and develop these things that, you know, everybody's able to move forward with, even if it's not, you know, the ideal solution that you came into that conversation expecting to get. It means really letting go of outcomes.
The consensus model mostly is still used, but like many nonprofits, we have a board of directors. To understand the dynamic between the board and the community consensus, I spoke to board member Marisol Cordero Goodman. I asked Marisol what she personally found to be the importance of White Bird Clinic in the community.
Well, in traditional senses, the board of director is kind of what we consider responsible for the functions of an agency, especially a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is my responsibility to kind of assist the board, to assist the other members, to make sure that we're governing the agency and its success and failures in a community. But ultimately, the board is responsible to ensure that the clinic is operating in compliance with federal laws, state laws, local laws, and regulation. And this particular board in itself works in a functioning body in collaboration with community, which is a little bit more less traditional than a lot of nonprofits, which tend to have that tier. We co-share some of those responsibilities and work back and forth with the members of our collective.
I asked Marisol what she thought the importance of White Bird Clinic in the community is.
In my personal experience, how I found White Bird to function in our community on some levels is to give voice to segments of our population or segments of our community that have been voiceless for a long time. I have always seen or experienced White Bird in bringing that compassionate care to an individual who has undergone trauma, in some sense the word, based on their interactions individually, based on their interactions with society. And so my experience of White Bird has been one of care, compassion, saying to that individual, we are here, we may not have the answer, we may not be able to solve what it is, the hardship that you are facing, but know that you are not alone in that hardship, that we will lend our ears, we will lend the resources that we have, and walk with you through that process as we are able. And so that has been my experience of White Bird in this community, is when there isn't an answer or there is no one to speak up, that the collective as a whole takes collective responsibility to assist in that process of speaking up.
Giving people a place to feel heard and taken care of is what we strive to do. But we have come up against an issue. Not enough people know about White Bird Clinic and the services that we provide, especially those who are underserved. So how can we help people if they don't know that we're here to help? Nao, a White Bird medic worker for CAHOOTS, tells me a little about this problem.
Well, yes. I mean, one of the things that I have noticed as working for CAHOOTS on my job as an administrator is that despite that we have been in the community for more than 30 years, 35 years for in Eugene and 5 years at Springfield, I just have noticed that the community still need information about us and what we do. The community, they have a different vision and perspective about what we do and how we're doing things. So, and then there is the communities that I'm working on is the Latino community, to be specific. We have the data is telling us that out of all our patients, only close to the 2% is in the Latino community, which doesn't match at all with the percentage of the Latino community in Eugene and Springfield, which is about 16% or more. Mm. So those numbers, they don't match. And it's because there are many other factors as well. First, probably the language. Second, they have no idea about what we're doing, like so many other members of the community, monolingual English speakers, for example. So I've been working on trying to promote the work that we do through my personal and White Bird media as well, and then let the community know what we do and how we're doing it and why we're doing it and what is our purpose and intention.
Accessibility and equity externally are an issue, but they're also an issue internally. White Bird Clinic actively tries to address the white, male-dominated, capitalist, hierarchical structures that our society still operates under. But it's an ongoing battle. Nao says that CAHOOTS in particular is really trying to address this issue.
CAHOOTS is an organization that is super open-minded, and they want to be culturally sensitive. They're taking classes, they're doing studies, de-escalation training, et cetera. But when you put those things in practice is when you finally notice where you are in that range, right? So it's something that you need to practice every day. Like me as medic, I need to remember, study, keep learning what kind of medication, what is the dosage, what is the route, what is my patient, what are the signs and symptoms for an allergic reaction, et cetera. I have to keep up with that knowledge so I can perform my best. To me, equity and diversity is the same. We have to talk about that. We have to practice it. And if we make mistake, we say sorry and then keep doing it. And in that process, we're gonna keep making mistakes. And the beauty of making mistakes, this is proving everybody that we're trying our best to do better.
In the coming episodes, I will talk to staff and volunteers from the many departments of White Bird Clinic to talk about their jobs and why the work they do is important to the community. To find out how to donate or volunteer, or to get more information on any of the programs mentioned here, you can go to whitebirdclinic.org. If you have questions or concerns, feel free to contact me at whitebirdmutualaid@gmail.com. That's whitebirdmutualaid@gmail.com. Thanks to the folks who contributed their time and voices to this show. And come back next week for episode 2 of White Bird Mutual Aid Radio. To play us out, here's local musician Sarah Adkins with her song Treasure. Shifting tides. I'm always there. I'm Hannah Francis. Thank you for tuning in to Whitebird Mutual Aid on KEPW at 97.3 FM.